All right, the time is 2 minutes in the of 6 o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop. A very good morning to you all, the Eagle FM listeners, no matter where you are tuning in from. Thank you so much. We really, really appreciate you for always choosing us. And this is Early Morning Scoop. This is a program dedicated to rather providing you with the latest update on the economy, entrepreneurship and public policy and trade as well. Your host, Lois Ashimi, and of course, I'll be here keeping you informed until the hour of 7:30, just to give you the usual update. And before we get into the international segment, please do not forget to connect with us on social media platforms, Eagle FM Namibia on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn, as well as the Village Newspaper page on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Do not also forget to subscribe on our WhatsApp channel, that is Eagle FM Media House, just for the daily news updates and newspaper alerts. And do not forget to download our app, that is Eagle FM app, available on your Google Play Store and the App Store, just to make yourself, or rather to stay informed wherever you go, wherever you are. You can able to tune in through the Eagle FM app. And please do not also forget to rather download the Imba app. You find that on your Google Play Store and, of course, your App Store. And to start off internationally is that the African Union Development Agency says African countries must work with banks to dismantle red tape hindering female entrepreneurs from accessing funding. Now, the union, which joined G20 member states in 2023, is part of the delegates attending the G20 Global Conference on Financial Inclusion and Women Empowerment held at Sun City. We might take a listen.
Banks to remove barriers that hinder women from accessing business funding.
We need to work with the banks to de-risk women's businesses to make sure we have specific products for women. But we also need to support women collectives. We need to support building women banks, having such champion, such big and strong financial champion at country level that women do no longer suffer to be able to access finance.
A delegate from UN Women emphasized the importance of women in leadership and global knowledge sharing.
We have a lot of programs that really hone in of, women that are in, various rural areas, and one of which is the entrepreneur program, of which I'm a program analyst of. So this program is a part of the Women Economic Empowerment, a broader program that we have at UN Women. What it does is it is a program that is funded by the De Beers Group. It is implemented by United Nations Women SAMCO in collaboration with our two partners, the Musina and the Blue municipalities.
The World Bank stressed that access to finance must be coupled with skills development.
Evidence also shows that access to finance interventions is not enough to improve business growth for women entrepreneurs, but they must be combined with access to skills interventions, such as training, as well as access to markets interventions.
South Africa's G20 presidency predecessor, Brazil, says this engagement will guide the G20 member states' second technical meeting.
Women can ascend in the spaces of power and decision making. And lastly, we understand that this conference that comes before the GT, the working group meeting,
it's
critical
para que a gente agregue valor de conhecimento.
Add value, knowledge.
All right, moving on to the next item is that the Shining Hope for Communities, a non-government organization, has developed a network for aerial water pipes to deliver clean, affordable water to communities in Nairobi's Kibra slum, which has been bribed by expensive private vendors and contaminated pipes.
Hurricane in hand, Eunice Akinyi is on her way to collect her latest supply of clean water, a hard-to-get resource in one of Africa's largest slums. Access to clean, safe water is a daily struggle that many residents like Akinyi, who call Nairobi's sprawling Kibra slum home, have become accustomed to. Their reality, these unsafe ground-level pipes polluted by all kinds of garbage.
Pipe I was using water from private water vendors, but I have a young child. He suffered from rashes and diarrhea, and we used to go to the hospital many times. When I drink it, it used to affect me. When I washed clothes with the water, my child got rashes and pimples on his body, and we had to keep rushing to the hospital, which requires a lot of money.
While private vendors have long been considered a relatively safe option, few people can keep up with the high prices they charge. The crisis is what led Shining Hope for Communities to come up with a quick fix, a unique initiative that's helping residents one aerial pipe at a time.
Our system, we use aerial pipeline. Simply because we don't want our water to be contaminated and also to have that easy of repairing the system. Because when you see you use the other, the conventional system of trenching or laying pipes, when you have a leakage underground, you cannot really detect where the leakage is coming from and when the leakage happened. So from our system is different because you can be able to see.
Shofco's network of aerial water pipes is significantly cheaper, delivering clean water at a fraction of the cost of private vendors. For residents like Agin Juma, it is a relief from the difficulties women who bear the primary responsibility for fetching water have come to bear in exchange for safe water.
When we relied on private water vendors, we had a problem, especially when it was a man selling water. Some of them would want to have a sexual relationship with you so that you do not have to queue in long lines to get water. Sometimes as women, we were forced to go fetch water at night, but it was dangerous because you did not know who you would encounter.
Since its launch in 2016, Shofco has built 52 water kiosks fitted with automated prepaid key card systems.
Now, moving on to the next item, is that the doctors in Uganda want to make a premarital sickle cell testing as a routine as HIV testing. Now, they say early testing for sickle cell gene carriage will help them apply age-appropriate counseling and care interventions. Now, more than 20,000 babies in Uganda are born with a sickle cell trait annually.
For many families in Uganda, sickle cell remains a silent crisis, one that only reveals itself after serious illness or tragedy.
It is a traumatizing situation. Most people go mental. They have mental problems because they are not accepted.
So you as Rwanda migration.
That's when families actually, there is violence there. Men tend to leave women, or women tend to leave men because and leave the child in the middle. So what am I saying? It is a problem. Parents find it difficult to understand that, to accept what their child is going to have. Because when we tell you what your child's journey is going to be, some people are not willing to take on that battle.
Each year, more than 20,000 babies in Uganda are born with a sickle cell trait. In some districts like Alebtong, in the northern part of the country, as many as one in four newborns are affected.
It's a silent killer that strikes from birth. But for decades, sickle cell disease went undetected in Uganda's newborns. That's beginning to change. At Mulago National Referral Hospital and across the country, babies are now being screened at birth, a simple test that could mean the difference between life and death.
Doctors say early diagnosis is the turning point, but they also want to go a step further by making premarital sickle cell testing as routine as HIV testing.
There should be a mechanism whereby institutions, religious institutions and families interest all young people into doing a premarital sickle cell testing, just as they always do with premarital HIV testing. So that way, we shall have interventions at a different levels, which are aimed at, first of all, testing for sickle cell gene carriage, and then applying age-appropriate counseling and care interventions.
More than 20 regional hospitals are now equipped to provide early diagnosis and care. But campaigners say access alone isn't enough.
The government should look into what we are advocating for. We should reduce prices of some medications, and some of these medications should actually be given free of charge because they are really helping the warrior out there. And then the other thing is that the gap in education awareness, it's too high. Because of that, stigma is still too much, and a lot of myths are still running around sickle cell.
With more than 300,000 babies born globally each year with sickle cell disease, Uganda's efforts could serve as a model, proving that...
All right, there you have it. Now, to move on to the next item is that the driver says a ride-hailing platforms such as the Uber InDrive charged excessively a higher commission on their fares. Now, the drivers want the commission cut down from about 35% to 5% and threatened to switch to local ride-hailing apps if they are demanded, if their demands are not met. We might take a listen.
Booking. App-based driver Stephen Imwidoye has operated under virtually all the ride-hailing platforms in Nigeria since 2016. His quest for better compensation made him switch platforms several times. But he says the more he switched platforms, the more things remained the same.
The fact to talk more about me taking us serious, to me, is a modern-day slavery. Yeah, it's a modern-day slavery because when you call someone a partner, you understand? You should put them to consideration before you take any decision, before you go into any negotiation. You have to bring them on table.
The bone of contention is the commission that the ride-hailing platforms collect for every ride. The drivers say it's too high and they want it cut down to 5%.
What they're only deploying to is the technology. You understand? The car is my own. I fuel the car, I fix the car, I do so many things. And they are taking 25 to 35%. How much remains for me? Imagine when I give them a trip of 3, 4, 5 kilometers away. With how much? The fuel price is going up every day. The cost of fixing the car is not friendly. So the commission, there's nothing wrong if they can bring the commission down to 5%. It's a win-win stuff.
The drivers' union has stepped in, threatening to pull their members away to local ride-hailing apps. On the 1st of May this year, app-based drivers across Lagos temporarily suspended their services for 24 hours to press home their demand.
A lot of our drivers don't go home. They sleep in their vehicle. That is my vehicle there. At times, for our members to meet up, they overstress themselves. Even the labor law said they should not work more than 10 hours, at least 12 hours. Drivers work 24 hours, and that's where fatigue comes in. That's where some people will sleep on the wheel, an accident will happen. Because they want to meet up, a lot of our drivers are on hire purchase. They don't own their vehicle, but they want to own it, but they strive hard to make money, to pay remittance and all that. But at the end of the day, they can't meet up because of this ridiculous price. But the app company are taking a chunk of the money. And we said no.
The union has now petitioned the ride-hailing operators before parliament. But so far, they say the operators are not budging.
They did not even respond nor reach out to us. So they did not even, you know, give that opportunity. So, and since they have chosen to look at us as slaves, as non-entity, as people that we don't know what we are doing, or we did not exist, even though they are making a lot of money from our, you know, our work, definitely they will hear from us.
Now, all the ride-hailing operators were reached out to declined to speak on the issue, but the union says it plans to picket their offices in the coming days in the resolve to mount more pressure on the operators to accede to the demand of the drivers.
All right, the time is 17 minutes in the of 6 o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop. Now, to move on to the next item, is that the we might take a listen to this conversation on the G20 TechPrint competition.
But this we're joined by Lyle Horsley, head of FinTech at the South African Reserve Bank. A very good evening to you. Thank you so much for your time. I mean, we've just listened there to some of the reasons and, you know, the motivation behind this. Talk to us about the purpose and the impact of the G20 Tech Sprint. What are you out to achieve?
Good evening and thanks so much for having me. So the G20 Tech Sprint is really a global competition, right, calling on innovators and disruptors from across the world to come together and deliver best-in-class technology solutions to help policymakers, central banks, the financial sector regulators solve for some of the problems and the challenges that we have prioritized from our side. And so the theme, as you mentioned in your opening remarks, was around trust and integrity in the financial sector, because these are really the foundational pillars for finance, and to bring people into the financial sector, they need to be able to trust that it will deliver on what it is intended to deliver on, and that there's integrity within the system, that there's not fraud and cyber attacks and so forth. And so our G20 Tech Sprint is really aimed at looking for those best-in-class solutions that will help us enhance these foundational pillars within the financial sector.
With the rapid pace of technological change, the role of artificial intelligence and so forth, comes the challenge of mitigating the risks of fraud and cyber attacks. What approach are you hoping participants will take? Because the bottom line, of course, is to build trust and integrity within the financial sector.
Absolutely. So, I mean, we are looking for out-of-the-box thinkers, right? We want those innovative solutions to come to the fore. We want people to think about cutting-edge technologies. But ultimately, we want people to really think about solving for these problems that we have put out there, and really solving for this in a real-world way that will make a meaningful difference. As the governor mentioned in his remarks, we want to bring people into the digital financial system. We don't want people to be left behind. And to do that, you need to enable people to have trust that when they make a payment, the payment is going to reach someone that it's intended to reach. You need it to have an identity that, you know, is verifiable, that's secure, that isn't subject to digital or identity fraud. And so we really want these, the innovators, we are challenging them to think about solutions in a creative way, to leverage technology in a creative way, but also one that is able to then solve for real world impact.
How will this opportunity assist SMMEs? I mean, you talk a lot about innovation, developers, ideas. What role do SMMEs play?
So the one problem statement is specifically targeted at SMEs around credit data portability. And this is really asking, how do we enable SMEs to be able to consent to their data being shared, both within a domestic context, but also potentially cross borders, right? So if you're an SME and you would like to apply for a loan in a different jurisdiction, how can we enable you to share your data from the jurisdiction where you're based and share it across to that other financial institution, whether it's your credit history, whether it's a history of the transactions that you've made to show that you are you qualify for a loan. So that's the kind of, I think, use cases that we are looking to say, how can we enable these SMEs digitally to be able to share this data in a secure manner to enable them to access financial services? But really, I think all the problem statements speak to the SMEs as well, because to do anything within the financial sector, it typically starts with who are you, right? And so you need a digital, secure identity
South African household
that's been verified that allows you to initiate those transactions, that says, I am who I say I am, and here's the proof, right? I don't need papers and a long drawn out process. I can enable this digitally to where you need it to go. And then similarly with the fraud and the cyber risk problem statement, it speaks to how do we mitigate fraud and cyber risks in fast payment systems. Now, a fast payment system is really, I make a payment from me to you and it lands in your bank account within 10 seconds, right? Mm-hmm. So again, how do we enable SMEs to transact digitally, to allow them to have a digital footprint of their transactions, to be able to then show their cash flow, to be able to apply for a loan and share that data, mm-hmm. Potentially across borders. So really, I think all three problem statements are equally relevant to SMEs.
And how- All right, there you have it. Now to move on to the next item is that the South Africa is racing against time to secure a sufficient supply of natural gas to protect its industries. Now, gas is common for industrial use. However, a small number of small businesses and householders also depend on it. And the country sources more than 80% of its natural gas from Mozambique through Sasol's pipelines. Now, the reserves are now being depleted, putting thousands of jobs at risk.
Will not be affected by the looming shortage of natural gas. This is because most households and businesses use LP gas. WITS Business School Advisory Board Chairperson Priscilla Mabelane says the shortage will, however, affect big companies.
I think South Africa has got two types of gas supply to the domestic market, particularly to the households. One is LPG, which is basically imported. When we used to have a lot of refineries that used to be refined here, so that will not be impacted. And I've had a lot of people saying, should I be bottling, buy more bottles as I approach 2028, 2029? We believe that will continue to be a source of supply.
Electricity Minister Dr. Khosi Ntsurama-Khopa says diminishing natural gas reserves in Pande, Mozambique, presents South Africa with both risks and opportunities.
South Africa currently imports approximately 160 petajoules of natural gas per annum from Mozambique, representing more than 85% of our total consumption. Sasol, the largest user, consumes around 125 petajoules annually, creating over 30,000 direct jobs and contributing approximately 5% of GDP. Yet the Pande Temane gas fields are projected to decline between 2026 and 2028. This anticipated gas cliff is a significant threat to our economy and one that demands a coordinated and forward-looking response.
Petroleum Agency of South Africa acting CEO Dr. Bongani Saindini says gas was discovered in South Africa between 2019 and 2020. However, experts say this may not help the country in curbing the looming shortage of natural gas used by many local manufacturers.
We have not found gas in this country, not in commercial quantities. I have just demonstrated and articulated the fact that gas was found in 2019-2020 through the Pearl Harbor and Leybert wells by Total Energies and Partners, gas that is right, that is now held by Main Street, the technical partners, Africa Energy. We've got their representatives here. Those are discoveries sitting some 175 kilometers from a gas to liquids refinery.
Eskom is investing in an LNG gas to power asset in Richards Bay. The storage facility will generate electricity and secure the natural gas supply from 2028. Ramakopa has urged South Africans to work together to avoid this shortage next year. No time to Makutulela.
All right, there you have it. Now to move on to Zambia. We were still in South Africa again. That Action SA has announced five initiatives that it says are meaningful economic justice in South Africa. Now, party president Herman Mashamba shared those at the launch of its economic transformation agenda in Johannesburg. We might take a listen.
Chava says the concrete and actionable policy levers aim to replace what the party says are failed ANC policies and that they will prioritize equality of opportunity over elite enrichment. These are inclusive economic empowerment, which will give birth to the Opportunity Fund aimed at replacing the BBBE, social investment grants that will introduce a universal basic income stimulus, the housing, land reform and spatial justice that will release hijacked buildings, gender justice to expand affordable childcare and enforce equal pay for equal work, and lastly, social cohesion to invest in youth development, mental health services and community safety.
We cannot afford a silo approach. Our response must be systematic. It must look not only at the economy, but at the entire society, including access to land, special planning, education, healthcare, safety, security, and many more. Action SA is not opposed to black economic empowerment. On the contrary, we believe that economic justice is a historical imperative. But we are opposed to the narrow, corrupt, and politically manipulated fashion in which it has been implemented. An approach that has entrenched inequality rather than dismantled it. For decades, the ANC has chased the illusion of equality of outcome, handing wealth to the connected few while leaving the majority behind. What we need now is a model that creates equality of opportunity for all. A model that breaks down the real barriers that keep millions excluded from the promise of freedom.
Mashaba says his party will table a draft resolution in Parliament to initiate the establishment of an ad hoc committee tasked with the post-1994 economic policies and shaping reforms. Diabosito,
right, there you have it now. Ooh, that marks our last update from internationally. And, of course, we can go into a very short commercial break. And then once we return, we'll take you through the local news update.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Back your preconceptions of technology. Explore the apps that are redefining the future. Out with the old and in with the new. From carrying physical hard copy hymn books to the world of digital hymn book versions. See the bold new expressions of the Imba app. Feel like you're part of something bigger. Experience the digital hymn book in the palm of your hands. Behold, the new and improved Imba that brings together various hymn books under one app. Here to unite a nation and spread the gospel. Some of the featured hymn books on Imba app are the Elsi Nehangano, the Asherero Omaimburiro, the Catholics Imaneka Karunga, the Afrikaans Sengfuor Diara, and many more. Contact us today if you'd like for your church hymn book to be added onto the list of Imba hymn books. 081-238-0633.
At my age, you start appreciating things you might have taken for granted before, like good health. I've known from early on that donating blood regularly was indeed good for my health. I'm too old now, but I've done my part in saving hundreds of lives while benefiting my own. You see, my risk of a heart attack, stroke, and cancer was always low because I donated blood.
Call NHB on 061-285-5400. We're about you.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
All right, welcome back. The time is 31 minutes in the hour of 6 o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop. Thank you so much for joining us again, or whether if you just joined us right now, thank you so much, and a very, very good morning to you. And to start off is that as part of the involving foreign exchange reserve management strategy, the Bank of Namibia will begin accumulating gold to diversify and strengthen the country's reserve assets. Now, the central bank aimed to allocate 3% of its foreign exchange reserves to gold, a move it says it's aligned with global trade in central banking. Now, this development was disclosed last week during a meeting between the central bank's leadership. Now, among the key updates shared was the decision to include global in Namibian foreign reserves portfolios. Now, gold is regarded as a strategic asset that preserves value during periods of inflation and economic uncertainty. Now, the central bank highlighted its increasing role in global reserve management due to its resilience in times of market volatility. Now, the move to include gold, targeting 3% of the net foreign exchange reserves, aligned with global central banking trends, given gold's strategic value in hedging against inflation and enhancing resilience during economic shocks. Now, that's what the bank stated. Now, Governor Johannes Gossip emphasized that growing global volatility has put pressure on the Namibian dollar. Now, it also left undressed. Now, he warned the currency depreciation could lead to higher import costs, full inflationary pressure, and widen the current account deficit. Now, he stressed the importance of adopting a more diversified export strategy and enhancing Namibians' participation in global trade diplomacy to safeguarding the country's economic resilience amid shifting global dynamics. Now, despite the new direction, the governor did not clarify how the Bank of Namibia planned to acquire gold, as the state does not own any gold mines and current production is dominated by private entities. Now, furthermore, Namibia does not produce refined gold. Instead, it exports unrefined bullion, gold in bulk from valued by weight to South Africa. Now, in January 2025, Namibia produced 889 kilograms of gold bullion, a decline from 935 kilograms in December 2024, but an increase compared to the 865 kilograms produced in January 2024. As of last week, Namibia's foreign reserve stood at 59.7 billion Namibian dollars, reflecting a 5.2% decline quarter on quarter. Now, the country's import cover is currently estimated at 3.9 months or 5.2 months when excluding oil and gas export imports that are financed externally. Right, moving on to the next item, Namibia has been ranked at 96th out of 181 countries in the 2025 Technology and Innovation Report published by the United Nations Conference and Trade and Development. Now, this report evaluates countries' readiness to adopt frontier technologies. Now, additionally, Namibia's information and communication technology sector is ranked significantly lower at 120th position. Yeah, we are joined by tech analyst, that is Tate Aaron Indongo. A very good morning to you, Mr. Indongo, and welcome to the Early Morning Scoop.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Hoy, today. Enjoy the morning.
We are doing great.
Okay, that's good, of course.
Yes. Mr. Indongo, I mean, unpack this for us. I mean, we're speaking about how Namibia, we are at 96th. And, of course, when talking about even ICT itself, it's at 120 position. Now, that is out of 181 countries, né? That is now in 2025. Now, what does Namibia need to do to improve its ICT capabilities, perhaps?
Okay, yeah, thank you for that. Mm-hmm. So, for Lear, our country is not in a good position, in the good learning position, so we need to do some some of the things that we need to improve, some of the things that we need also to put in the concentration, because this ringing is really affecting our growth. Even the investors, no one will want to come to the country on that position in terms of ICT, because some investor, they want where they can see that, okay, when it's coming for the ICT for this country is good. Because ICT sector, it consists of a lot of things. And we find ourselves on that position, it's not good. So we need to invest more and to improve more on our ICT. Because one of the things is that we need to invest and to improve the network tower across our region. So especially across our region, because I wish to even to get to wonder, even in Windhoek, the capital city, where those people that are at the Oostende somewhere, at the Katutula, that side, some of those people, they won't have the internet, not internet, but the network connectivity is not good for them. You go to the northern region, Okhangwena, Msati, Oshkoto, Kavango, Zambezi, still the same. When you come into this region of South, in those deep South, they are still struggling with the network. So we need to improve, we need to put more network towers in those areas so that we can improve the network connectivity for our people. And then we can improve from there, because if you can remember, even at your village, maybe that time where there was no network tower, different people, they were not coming there. But because of the network tower, you find the community market is coming there and everything, because they know already that when you are going there, when you are going to use your computer or your machine to order your stock, the network is stable because of the network tower that is there. So that's one of the things that attract more business people, more investor to be in the place or in our region. Another thing that we need to tackle is that we need as a country to change or to upgrade, to improve our four next generation, the one that we call 4G to 5G, which is a five next generation. Because the 4G is okay, but if we want to improve our ICT sector to make sure that our internet is faster for connectivity and support from engaging or emerging technology like the internet and the smart agriculture, we need 5G. Which one is that one is the most fastest one, and that one is the most suitable for us to start improving on that. Yes. And another one is that we need to build our local data center. You see, the local data center is something very important, local data center and our cloud service. Because just last year and in the beginning of this year, our data were hacked. Cyber attack, we're attacking our data there. So meaning that we might be built that one, but it's not secure or it's not strong enough for us to have our have our strong data that can accommodate, that can be that can keep our data on the safe side, not to be hacked or to be attacked by those cyber attacker. Because one of the things that discourage our people is that when you heard about a certain country that it was attacked, it was experiencing a cyber attack, that's a good experience. And no one wants to come to your country to invest in you, because that fear, it will remain in his mind, in his plan or in their plan. So we need to do that. And I understand why we are find ourselves in that position, because this lending, ICT lending, it's more similar like the one for football, for soccer, is those who can remember how soccer is going. Because even if you were in football, even if you were lane number one in position, then you start losing games consecutive.
Mm.
So you're going to find yourself in third position or fourth position. It's the same, like, when us, we were attacked by the cyber attack.
Mm.
It discouraging us to find ourselves to that position. It pull us down to find us on that position. And there are some of the things that we also we need to improve is digital literacy and skills. So we are doing it. And most of the time, I like to give emphasis on this one.
Mm.
We are doing it, but we don't bring it as a mandate to start training our community people to make use of technology. Because I see some of the needs of ICT in the region, different regions, they are giving the computer skills training, but sometimes if I can take a follow up to find out, okay, when was this training was done and when we're going to have a upcoming one. Sometimes I might find once in a year, sometimes or twice in a year, which is not enough. We need at least even 4 or 6 in a year, those trains, they need to be there. New people, you train them, you get another intake, something like that, because I want people to get awareness and to get comfortable with the technology thing, with the internet thing, with everything, because things they are keeping changing, and when you give them training, they get open, and then they get, oh, this is how the thing is done, so now I can do something different with this technology, not only be scrolling Facebook, TikTok, and something like that. So that's not the only technology we know. There's something like this, so we need those kind of training to be improved. Another one is that we need to improve also to promote innovation and the entrepreneur. So Tech Hub and the incubator, those are the backbone of our ICT sector to be landing in a good position, because we don't fund them. You see, even when I see some funding for the startup, normally they go to those different entrepreneurs, but not specifically to the tech entrepreneur.
Mm-hmm.
But we need this tech entrepreneur to be funded, because that's going to play a major role to improve our ICT in our country.
Mm-hmm.
Once we fund them, once we incubate them well, they're going to give us a good result, and they're going to give a good experience for Namibia to be positioned in a good learning position in Africa and in global also.
Mm.
So those are the things that we need also to consider.
Mm. Yeah, Mr. Adran, of course, one would also ask, like, what is the importance of having the improved ICT in the country? What will happen then if you are ranked maybe at position 2, position 3? What is that? What is the importance of that?
Yes. So the beneficial of finding yourself or as a country in a good position, so is that economic growth, it will be diverse in a good way. Like, okay, because ICT is a key enabler of productivity across sector, including agriculture, healthy, finance and mining and so on. So, because when you are there in that position, and as I said, your economy will start growing, because even the investor themselves, when they see, oh, so Namibia is now in position 2 or position 1, you start, okay, so I have no doubt to go to Namibia to explore my business or to invest in Namibia there, because their ICT is on the standard. Their internet thing, their technology and the infrastructure, they are on the standard.
Mm-hmm.
Another one is that job creation and the youth empowerment. It is already a one point that when you are there, So because we already have, for example, we already have higher unemployment, mm-hmm. and the youth empowerment is at the low level. But now, if your ICT or your technology infrastructure is on the standard and you're in the good profession, mm-hmm. meaning that this higher unemployment, because it would be lower, because one of the biggest sector, mm-hmm. especially in Namibia, that can provide quality employment is ICT and the youth growth is ICT, because when you have a good infrastructure that mm-hmm. can be enable the youth to make use of it, like the fast internet, the network tower, the accessible, the internet, you are making them to make use of a digital platform and also to become a freelancer. Because everyone can become a freelancer, no one will be, and then the higher unemployment is to reduce, because if somebody can work for themselves and engaging or in a remote opportunity, so there will be no people claiming that I don't have a job or I don't have a source of income. People, they're starting growing and they're looking for another opportunity. So, and again, the other thing is that when you are in that position, the good part is that you can have a better education system. Because if I can ask you, when was the last time you had online classes? It was that time of Corona, but nowadays, when Corona is end, you can't find institution offering online classes. Even submission of the assignment, sometimes in some institutions, no more online. They say go print your assignment and submit. But those are the things where now you have that position, your education is upgraded. Your education system is also in a good hand. And also the regional and the global competitiveness, it is in a good stage. Like people, they can start now competing. And when they are competing in Namibia at that position, mm-hmm. number one or something, it gives or it make attractive destination for foreigner direct investor, especially in technology and service. So those are the good benefits. And even to the healthcare mm-hmm. service. Well, because when we have a telemedicine, which is can enable the remote consultation and reduce the need of traveling to the hospital. You know, our people, they've been, you can go to the hospital you spend many hours in the queue, but you are just going there for consultation.
Okay.
But if those things, you find yourself as a county in that position, meaning that mm-hmm. that free consultation, online consultation can be done there mm-hmm. because you have a better internet or technology infrastructure that can. So we just need as a country to and the stakeholder in the IT sector to keep improving our things. We are in a small generation population, but we need to keep our everything, our mindset to be attached on the ICT, because that's the only thing that can improve mm-hmm. our country in nowadays.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, Mr. Aaron.
Thank you, Miss.
All right.
It's 50 minutes in the of 6 o'clock, and this is Early Morning's Cube. And, of course, moving on to the next item is that the residents of Tuhingireni informal settlement says they continue to live in a dire condition without access to clean water, electricity, and proper roads, a situation they describe as worse than in some villages and remote areas. Now, despite voting for change over the past 35 years, many in Tuhingireni say they feel abandoned and unsafe in Rundu. Now, the repeated calls for development have gone unanswered, leaving them without the most basic services. Now, we have waited for too long. We have voted for leaders hoping that things would change, but we are still living without water, electricity, and proper streets, said Kamina Kantema, one of the residents. Now, according to Kantema, some resident once invested in household appliances like fridges and televisions, expecting electricity would soon follow. We bought those things years ago, believing development will reach us. Now they are just now they just sit there gathering dust and becoming useless. That's what Kantema said. Now he questions the disparity. Those who live in Kankana, a village in the remote areas, have electricity at their homestead, but we who are in town are still without electricity. How did those in villages manage to have electricity and not us in town? That's what she asked. But then now the population of Tuhingireni are now calling for unity among all Rundu residents to stand together and demand better living conditions. Now it's time to save our people. We must unite and speak with one voice. That's what Kantema said. Now another frustrated resident, Joseph Machai, said the lack of electricity has turned the area into a hotspot for crime. We live in fear for our lives. If you are sick at night or want to go outside, you risk being beaten or killed in the dark. That's what he said. Now, in March this year, a 43-year-old man identified as Nesta Ndara was found dead at his brother's premises in Tuhingireni. Now, his mother, Sophia Kambida, is pleading for justice, blaming the lack of electricity for creating condition where the criminal operate with impurity. Now, she told the village newspaper that residents are afraid to report crimes, fearing intimidation by gangs believed to be active in the area. Now, Loide Chirunda shared her trauma after being robbed of her phone inside her yard earlier this year. Now, in a similar incident, John Caveto reported a case of property damaged and threats after three known suspects who had not yet been arrested broke down his doors and threatened to kill him. Luckily, his neighbors came to his rescue, he said. Now, responding to the residents' concerns, Kavango East Police Regional Commissioner Adrias Haingura said they are aware of the ongoing crimes and will ensure regular weekend patrols to help residents feel safer. Now he urged residents to remain calm and contact the police directly in case of urgent matters. Now, Haingura also mentioned that they are working with the town council to repair sandy streets and improve night patrols. Rudu Urban Councillor Victoria Kauma explained that the land belongs to the Rundu Town Council, and since it has not been surveyed, no development can take place. Now, she said the funds pledged by her office are still available, but will only be released once the town council leads the way forward. Now, the Villager newspaper contacted Rundu Town Mayor Gabriel Kanyanga for comment, but his phone went unanswered. The Northern Regional Electricity Distributor, NORED, Head of Communications, Simon Lucas, said the responsibility of identifying areas for electricity connections lies solely with the Rundu Town Council. We just connect the street lights or electricity and maintain the infrastructure, he said. Now, the council's assistant, a public relations officer, stated that the issue is still under investigation and that a report will be shared with the public once completed. Now, moving on to the next item, is that the American digital or internet-based companies, profit AI over the world but don't pay taxes anyway. Now, there's various community economies are now drafting laws to force those internet-based giants to pay their dues. now one of those countries that has penalized FB or F and Facebook met, or rather Meta, is in Nigeria. Is Nigeria. However, Meta is now threatening to shut down services in Nigeria. Now, in this regard, my colleague Dwight unpacked this for us.
Now, no African government, not even all the billionaires from South Africa and the billionaire from Nigeria, Ali Dangote, none of them have the capacity, the capital, nor the means to build the same and install the same cable, the same kind of a cable, through Africa, connecting all the other countries with each other.
Yeah.
Now, it obviously shows you, and this has been one of the particularly, I don't want to use the word unfair, because unfair would be based upon an emotion, but it shows you the difference in economic prosperity that technology and innovation sectors in the US and in China and Europe have enjoyed, specifically because they know what the internet is. I mean, Happy, South Africa has the most websites on this continent versus the rest of Africa.
Mm.
And South Africa is, and South Africa is even such a tiny amount versus, let's say, even what country is a similar, even the United Kingdom. South Africa has smaller websites than the United Kingdom itself.
Mm.
Now, if we ask that particular question, is there a way to reverse engineer this? Yes, reverse engineering always exists. I mean, that was the playbook that happened always in the Second World War. The engineers from the Americans, from the Germans, from the Russians, what they would always do if supplies were low, they would always use parts and spare parts from wrecks, specifically from tanks, on the battlefield, from the enemy, convert those parts, build something new, and then they're back into combat or into warfare. The downside here is that no one views the economic platform in Africa, like the rest of the world views this, as a particular economic battlefield.
Mm.
Specifically, we have a disconnect between the politicians understanding what needs to be done,
mm-hmm,
and what really has to happen on the ground. For example, we can say beneficiation has to take place, but everyone else that can bring beneficiation to a Namibian is a foreigner with a massive bank account, which is usually in a foreign currency, which secondly negates the whole idea of Namibians processing, refining for Namibians to use. And which is a protectionist strategy as well.
Okay.
Also remember that.
Yeah.
Beneficiation has a protectionist strategy worked, woven into it. There's no way that you can say beneficiation is not protectionism and not saying so. It is. It's a format of protectionism. It's one of the multiple functions that are open to policymakers, and they want to use words in a different way, but it speaks of it speaks of protectionism.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing is, Happy, that you also highlighted in that subject matter. So the discussion in the Nigerian context obviously means that Nigeria has ramped up its regulations, meaning having things in place in order to protect Nigerian users, the consumer. I bring you to a Namibian context. Namibia doesn't have a consumer protection legislation. We have a consumer protection department in the former Ministry of Trade. I just do not know if the new Ministry of International Relations and Industrialization,
yeah,
which is trade supposedly,
mm-hmm,
and industrialization trade, if they will champion the same particular thing. Because the merger of these two ministries into one should tell any person that specifically the Ministry of International Relations now is going to have a outward-looking perspective. Now, what happens to consumer protection, for that matter? Who takes up the mantle of consumer protection? Do you throw consumer protection now with the other part? Where did trade go? I forgot where the trade part went. Where do you throw consumer protection? Do you now throw it under Ministry of Labor, which is now Ministry of Justice and Labor? Or do you and the Ombudsman probably will become an integral part will be integrated into the Ministry of Justice and Labor? How does this work? Who takes up consumer protection? Do you empower the Namibia Competition Commission?
Mm.
But Competition Commission doesn't speak about consumer and consumer protection. Mm. It speaks about having fair playing rules. You know, it's like a referee on a football pitch, you know, between two soccer teams. That's the Competition Commission. It doesn't speak about consumer protection.
Mm.
So the downside is here, the Nigerians had a purposeful direction in saying, this is what we want to do in terms of users in Nigeria interacting with Facebook, Meta, WhatsApp programs. On the reality, what they implemented was updating their 2019 data protection legislation, and then obviously also updating the Competition and Consumer Protection Commission, because they've got two things, Competition and Consumer Protection Commission. So they expanded the particular role of such an agency.
Okay. Now, Dwight, lastly, on this. Now, the tension between sovereign regulation and global corporate power is becoming more evident in Africa. So what message would you say does Nigeria's action send to other African nations? And how might this reshape Africa's role in the global digital economy?
First and foremost, Happy, the particular scenario here is, like I mentioned, this was a 38-month investigation that was conducted by these two agencies. The third regulator that I mentioned, the advertising regulator the Advertising Regulatory Council of Nigeria.
Mm-hmm.
These guys, they themselves instituted a lawsuit against Meta specifically for advertising that was directed at the Nigerian market through Facebook and Instagram by Meta without ensuring the same vetted and approved before exposure. These are almost like standards that you've got to do. So what happens is that with my experience in advertising, In Namibia falls under the South African Advertising Authority automatically. We automatically fall under it. Don't ask me why, because I've even tried to understand how and why. It only says so in one of my textbooks or one of my particular sort of like education booklets that I still hold on to here since finishing my degree. Is that the scenario with this is, Nigeria is a large, there's this facilitating economy known as the advertising industry.
Yeah.
Now the advertising industry has various mediums that it displays messaging on. Those messages are paid for, whether on radio, whether on a billboard, whether in an application, whether on the ditch, on a website, whether in a newspaper, whether in a magazine, whether on, what's the other one that you also get, whether on a football pitch, whether on a TV screen, whether on your internet screen. If you see something that looks like a paid for sponsored message, then you know it's advertising. It's an economy. The downside here has been the claim that this regulator makes speaks towards the most ignored industry in the world that actually has a direct impact on many consumption trends in the world. For example, exposure, vetted and approved before exposure of illegal, unlawful, and violation of the extent of advertising law in Nigeria. So this means there are potentially ad agencies or advertisers in the Nigerian context who didn't follow the rules of the game in Nigeria in terms of advertising. So they didn't submit it to a vetting for a procedure that has a seal, you know, a standard or a seal of approval, and it just gets displayed on social media on these Meta platforms.
Mm-hmm.
This means specifically that the Competition and Consumer Protection Commission of Nigeria, and the Data Protection Commission of Nigeria. Those guys didn't take into account for what this advertising regulator is trying to achieve. This advertising regulator is dealing with content, what kind of content is being displayed, and is it paid for, and did these paid for contents, were they vetted by a centralized agency like themselves? Campaigns, messaging, is it harmful? Are you displaying alcoholic beverages or alcohol? Are you selling alcohol in your messaging? Are you selling tobacco products in your messaging? Remember, many countries have different particular values about the same particular products.
Mm-hmm.
And these are some of the things that were not entirely factoring into the regulator, the guys that are from the government, because this advertising agency, they're dealing with self-regulation in their own landscape. Now, here's another thing, Happy. The two regulators are government on the one side. The two government regulators, they represent laws. The advertising agency guys, they have to, and they took this to a federal high court. I mean, they sued the local Nigerian agent who works with, you know, displaying these Facebook, Instagram, and WhatsApp messages. It's the company's name is AT3 Resources Limited. They took these guys to a federal high court in the Abuja Judicial Division.
Yeah.
And what these guys are trying to achieve is literally a, what do they call that? It's a commercial, it's literally a commercial, lawsuit between the, it's not the state versus anyone. These are between two private entities facing off against each other in this discussion. So as to tell the one that is being sued, you know, you've got to apply to the standards that the rest of the industry is following. Otherwise, the rest of the industry will use you as a template, and then will throw away the standards, and then there will be a perception of chaos in the particular advertising industry.
Yeah.
Now, that ultimately, you don't know if it will lead to complete doom or if it will completely achieve certain particular, you know, positive outcomes in that regard. So far, the Nigerian advertising regulator had said that they are just seeking declaration, among others, that the continued publication exposure of various advertisements directed at the Nigerian market through Facebook and Instagram platforms by Meta, without ensuring the same as vetted and approved before exposure, is illegal, unlawful, and a violation of the extant advertising law in Nigeria. So primarily, they just want the High Court in Abuja to give a declaration and to clear up any particular ambiguity where that might surface.
Mm-hmm.
So, if you're looking at the leveraging side of things, firstly, countries like Namibia, they've got to get their legislation in place. Many people would argue that America does not have data protection and consumer protection legislation. They actually do. It's just that you don't hear about them much. There's a lot of resources on that. Mm-hmm. Thirdly, many people would say countries like America don't have much in terms of, you know, companies or self-regulating agencies, you know, dealing with let's if we can call them you know, transgressing entities. They actually do. You just don't hear that much about it.
Yeah.
The discussion here is, countries in Africa have the ability to first get the laws in place, get the acts in place,
mm-hmm.
and then you start systematically developing towards installing the agencies, the commissions, the authorities, and the regulators who then have to be in charge of these particular industries.
Okay.
Before they can look at any rapid investment, economic development, calling for investment, first get the legislation in place. I mean, Happy, just to end off on this note, We have a cyber security response task force in Cannes that is backed up by a cyber security bill, and it's in draft form. It has not even been voted on and been gazetted. This actually means that this task force doesn't have real legal powers. And the weird thing is, the Communications Regulatory Authority and the Ministry of Information and Communications Technology, they get up on press conferences and they say, we've got this team, but this team has no legal basis to operate on. There is no legislation that supports it. it's all in draft and bill format.
Mm-hmm.
So firstly, we have to sort out legislation, get it through the door, and then ensure that it operates to look after sectors, segments, industries, and parts of the economy.
Indeed.
All right, you had it. The time is 11 minutes in the off, 7 o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop. Now to move on to the next item is that my colleague, Cheryl Seaman, spoke to a researcher, Matthias Hankala, on the land issues. We might take a lesson.
Over 90% of the testimonies gathered from claimants confirmed that their fertile land was taken from them during the colonial era. Does this issue still persist today, or what does the current situation say about it? So today we got into the conversation with Matthias Hankala, one of the researchers of a project which examining the applications of the explorations of land without compensation. So good morning, Hankala, and welcome to Early Morning Scoop.
Yes, a very good morning to you, and thank you for having me.
Hankala, what is expropriation without compensation?
Right, thank you very much. Probably you are well aware that the issue of land have been persisting over the years. And mostly, it would take us back to the 1970s, to the Berlin Conference, where, a lot of European countries came together to discuss the annexation of land in Africa. So, which happened, through colonialization. And, this land was taken for free. So now it's, of recent that we have realized that scores of, you know, public, or let me say, civil activists, of the concern that this land is owed to be taken back to the rightful owners without compensation, because without paying a cent, because it was taken for free. And this, sector of the society feels that, it's greatly of, it's of a great unfairness should the people be compensated for the very same land which they have, which their ancestors took for free. So now, it's for this reason that myself and a group of scholars came together to examine what could this have, what should this happen, what could be possible, what could be the possible impact to the economy as a large. Yes.
Okay. And how can it benefit the Namibian economy, like this situation? How does it benefit to the economy?
Right. So now, as of current, there are two sectors of the, or let me put it this way, that the land in Namibia is divided in three parts, which where you have now the communal land, which is administered by the land boards, as enacted or is established by the land board of 1975, Land Board Act of 1975. Which basically means that this land belongs to the state, and those who are residing there, they are residing there as per the administration of the land boards, and they don't have title deeds. Meanwhile, where else, then you have another sector of the land where you have now the agriculture, land, or sometimes is referred to as the commercial land. Now, this commercial land, is where, occupants of this land have title deeds. Basically means that they have a right to sell this land. They also have a right to inherit it. So now, you have to remember that after independence, the government came up with the willing buyer, willing seller policy. So basically means that, the willing seller, determines the price he or she wants to sell this land to the state, and then the state have a mandate to distribute, to redistribute this land, to the landless, Namibians. So now, along the way, there was also an issue of landless, or let me say, absent land owners. Basically means that people, a lot of farms are owned by people who are not even residing in Namibia, and it's for that reason that there are no economic activities taking place in such land.
Mm-hmm.
So now it's of the opinion that this issue came up in South Africa, where a lot of people were calling for this land to be expropriated by the state,
mm-hmm.
Without paying a cent. So now, this
coincidence
led to the amendment of the expropriation bill,
mm-hmm.
of 1975 to be amended, and after it was suspended by the president sometimes on the 23rd of January, it really attracted a lot of attention, including international attention, where there were some talks of sanctions. So this is I can say in the way that it can also benefit the country in such a way that should it be handled properly, like if the land have to be taken for public interest,
mm-hmm.
or for public interest, and be redistributed to those who are willing to really take, mm-hmm. up agriculture for food production seriously, then it will benefit the Namibian economy in such a way that you will be able also to be self-sufficient, and also import, or let me say export,
mm-hmm.
our produces to the international community and attract foreign currency. So it can benefit the country or the economy in such a way. But
mm-hmm.
We also have to be cautious that this issue have to be approached in a very cautious manner, whereby thorough investigations have to be undertaken, and weigh the pros and cons. Because you have to remember that after independence, our neighboring Zimbabwe, veterans also pressured the government to take over the land, but then that issue resulted in the collapse of the economy. So it's both beneficial and also can also be proved to be detrimental on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay. Hangara, what are the problems might arise if this issue is mishandled?
Yeah, if this issue is mishandled, if this issue is mishandled,
mm-hmm.
it can also lead or lead bring us to the situation where you know, the international community will feel like they will impose sanctions,
mm-hmm.
just like it happened,
mm-hmm.
in South Africa. It can also attract the international community to impose sanctions on our country,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes sanctions or trade embargoes or anything of that sort can affect the economy negatively. You have to understand that Namibia, we depend so much on foreign produces,
mm-hmm.
and it happens that some sanctions are imposed on our economy or on our country. It can also basically means that it will be very difficult for us to access certain products. But also on the other hand, sanctions can also teach one a lesson that they need to be self-reliant. I can give you one example, like Cuba, for example, is one of the countries which have been facing trade embargoes from the United States, but even so, it has been thriving. So it basically teaches us that the more the economy is suppressed from external, from the outside, the more the people will be willing to do things on their own. But now, because we are so reliant on foreign producers, there is some forms of reluctance from the general population. So, so if that happens, then it will mean only two things. Either is that the economy will be suppressed, or it will thrive if people took it upon themselves that they need to do things on their own.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay, thank you so much, Angela, for being with us on the Early Morning Scoop. I would like to say, have a blessed day ahead.
Thank you very much. Same to you.
Mm-hmm.
Bye.
Right, to the time is 22 minutes in the hour of 7 o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop. Now to move on to our last update of the day is that the World Food Program has reported that it has assisted about 27,036 people in Namibia in 2024 with various needs across the 9 regions. Now, this was released in the recent annual country report, and the region from which those impacted Namibians came were Hardap, Omaheke, Kunene, Kavango East, Kavango West, Oshizonzupa, Zambezi, Ohangwena, and Oshikoto. Now, the areas that the support was categorized under where food insecurity crisis, emergency response, and resilience building. Now, in the gender breakdown of the report, 53% of the recipient were women, and 47 were men. The people who have disabilities were also counted in this report, and they were about 5,894, and the gender breakdown is similar to that of the overall group. Now, the report also follows the strategy plan that the agency has to implement in Namibia. Now, this period ran from 2017 to 2024. Now, according to the report, the food insecurity in Namibia is at severe levels with a tangible implication on the ground. Namibia is experiencing severe food insecurity, with 48% of the population needing urgent assistance due to drought, economic decline, unemployment, and price shocks. Now, the report also notes the countermeasures that were developed, and rolled out to tackle the food insecurity issues in the country. Now, 11,412 children were covered by the home ground school feeding programs in 2024. Additionally, 185 smallholders farmers who supplied fresh food produced to schools benefited from the home ground school's feeding programs in 7 regions as well. Now, to ensure that the initiative brought forward have a long-lasting impact, the World Food Program outlined that policy also requires attention in bolstering them. Now, 3 nations, national policies, strategies, and programs on the school health and nutrition were enhanced or developed with the support of the World Food Program, the report explained. Under the emergency response pillar, the agency noted the ability to mobilize and generate support from stakeholders and donors to effectively respond when crises arise. Now, in partnership with the government and key donors, World Food Program provided immediate relief through commodities vouchers and value vouchers and soup kitchens, prioritizing vulnerable groups such as children, pregnant women, and drought-affected households. That's what the report reads. Now, besides the Namibian government, the World Food Programme could also rely on the Korean Development Agency, the U.S. Agency for International Development, and the Japanese government, the U.K. International Development Agency, and Brazilian Cooperation Agency, and other U.N. sister agencies. Now, the last pillar was resilience building, with aim to ensure the implemented approaches have a long-term positive impact. Now, in that, a World Food Programme implemented long-term solutions, including sustainable agriculture projects, improved irrigation systems, enhanced digital social protection systems, and strengthening food supply chains to help communities withstand future climate shocks. That's what the agency said. Now, the outcome of this, the agency said they donated equipment to the Namibian government to the value of $31,500 for its emergency operations center. Now, this was separate from the training that was conducted by the World Food Programme of governmental staff. Now, World Food Programme supported the training of 70 government staffs enhancing Namibian food security analysis. That's what the report also adds. Now, in terms of the effectiveness of the crisis response, the report notes that the response required innovation ways for impacted peoples to be assisted. Now, about 26,868 people reached through commodity vouchers and value vouchers, and that now brings to 200,000 about $200,000. That translates to 4 million Namibian dollars. Now, once transferred to people in the form of commodity vouchers, and 143 retailers were evaluated for commodities and value voucher programs. Now, that's what the agenda also explains. Now, on that regard, about 168 smallholders farmers were supported with training, input, equipment, and infrastructure. Now, this is a positive growth in growth indicator through the metric of $7,600. That's translated to $138,700. Now, it sells through eggs and horticultural produce at the 18 food system sites. Now, that's what it says. Now, World Food Programme also indicates that supply chains were supported as well as those that requires the effective movement and transfer of assistance during time of crisis. Now, this saw a low out of digital services for easy access and use. Four data and analytics services were developed by partners and World Food Programme and provides to the government. Now, the two supply chain solution and services were provided to the government and partners. The organization just reported also that. So now that marks our last update of the day. Thank you so much for tuning in from today's segment, the Early Morning Scoop. Thank you so much. And I wish you all the best to listen also to all the programs today, and I'll hand over to my colleague Dada Michael Shaveri to take you through the unpacking of the day. Thank you so much.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
So, not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. Uh-huh. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. Mm. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past. Mm. And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook,
Instagram, and LinkedIn, our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Back your preconceptions of technology. Explore the apps that are redefining the future. Out with the old and in with the new. From carrying physical hard copy hymn books to the world of digital hymn book versions. See the bold new expressions of the Imba app. Feel like you're part of something bigger. Experience the digital hymn book in the palm of your hands. Behold, the new and improved Imba that brings together various hymn books under one app. Here to unite a nation and spread the gospel. Some of the featured hymn books on Imba app are The Elsi Nehangano, Rio Sherero Omaimburiro, The Catholics Maneka Karunga, The Africans Sung for Tierra, and many more. Contact us today if you'd like for your church hymn book to be added onto the list of Imba hymn books. 081-23-58-063. You can also email us at digital@omalaiti.com. Download and discover Imba today. You can find it on the App Store as well as the Google Play Store.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Omutiha utekirwa kaguna imatina omjo. Chikao shafa sana nana longi shifa ya ishiwite moshiwana. Iye moyawo ota ingongo tisamweni. Anage shifa ya Namibia ombitombwa na wa onjika. Seitha nina omayaguro nilandito ma iwe yonge shifa yoyo kupitira mo Eagle FM Media House. Ngoe tuende tuimeneha uu kakombanga nina. Kara omkwashi pareki uimopo yomwe programa letu. Moambo lengira selma kodara heta tuimu. Datu ndatu heari hamano tano ondiyaj. Eagle FM. So I.
Listen to Eagle FM in Lodritz at 91.2 FM. Listen to Eagle FM in Onthea at 90.5. Listen to Eagle FM in Mariental at 101.2. Listen to Eagle FM in Okahanja at 104.